Okay, we'll call the Subsistence Committee meeting to order. We don't have a quorum, as you know, and we're a little bit behind schedule at this time, but we do have, we're not going to be able to take any action on any of the bills that we had before us. We have two bills that we will be discussing, and I'd like the administration to explain the fiscal note that accompanies House Bill 673, and if there's anyone else from the department here that has any position of the administration on whether or not they're for or against the legislation. And House Bill 772 is an act which would permit the taking of fish and game for, and permit trade and barter. And I don't think there's a fiscal impact on that, but Mr. Morrison, if you, I mean, would you please identify yourself and explain the fiscal note to House Bill 673.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Morrison, Director of Administration for the Department of Fish and Game. House Bill 673 establishes a division of subsistence hunting and fishing. The fiscal note is prepared assuming a certain level of staffing at headquarters and also a certain level of regional staffing, which was provided to me by the assistants to this committee. The headquarters staffing would consist of the director, a deputy director, and two support positions, the secretary and administrative assistant. The regional positions would be in 10 areas throughout the state, and we would have the equivalent of a range 18 to these regional offices assisted by a full-time clerk Titus III. The range 18 was selected because that is currently the project leader level for our department biologists, and I'm not sure if we would want to or need to create a new class specification for these range 18 positions, but I'm assuming that they would be about the same level as our project leader biologists, and they are, as indicated in fiscal note, expected to have a very broad level of professional experience as well as a good ability to relate with the public. So assuming that particular level of staffing, which may or may not be desired by the committee based on the fiscal impact of that level of staffing, the total fiscal note for the first year comes to $867,700. I do need to emphasize that this is very broad type brush budgeting, and I feel that that's as good a guess as we make without getting into a great deal of detail.
Excuse me, how does this compare with the division of sport fish, division of game, division of commercial fishing?
The division of commercial fish's budget is in the neighborhood of $5 million. I don't have the figures right now. Game is what about the total budget? So game's budget is about $3.6 million. Sport fish is a little less than that.
A little less than what?
Than 3.6. It's probably about $3 million. I don't have those figures right here at my fingertips. I can provide those to you.
Yeah, I would appreciate those if you could get them to the committee. I don't have any other questions on this matter, unless members of the committee or staff. Phil, did you have any questions?
No.
Okay, unless you have
Mr.
any other
comments.
Yes,
this travel for regional positions is set at 8,000 for this many number of, is for each one or?
It's for each of the regional positions. I'm assuming the travel budget for each regional position is $3,000, and for the director and the deputy director, $4,000.
Now, the director would be located in Juneau or?
Headquarters would be. I'm planning on Juneau because he would need to, I assume, be very close to the commissioner's office.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you got listed here 24 people, and the way I count it is 22, unless I'm off.
You might be counting or not counting the Juneau regional.
Oh, I see, okay, okay.
Mr. Chairman, how is this figure for for space and space rent around that?
We, Mr. Chairman, the $600 a month is just a, right now, an educated guess on what it's going to cost to be a push for space. We recently went to the bid for a game biologist office in Galena, and that ended up being about $600 a month, if I recall correctly. So just based on that, it works out to about $2.50 a square foot a month, plus just other miscellaneous bonuses. That's on the average. In some locations it could be higher, in some lower. In Barrow, I expect it would be substantially higher.
That 250 square foot was in Galena?
No, that's about the average I use. I'm using 250 a square foot for space only, and then it's about approximately another $100 a month for phones, janitorial, and just other miscellaneous contractual services.
The equipment, Jim. What are we going to have there?
The I've budgeted primarily just desks, typewriters, bookcases, and I've also included dictation and transcription unit for each regional office, expecting that that the biologists would be traveling at least a fair amount and want to take advantage of the dictation on their travel. Good management tool, saves a fair amount of time.
What does a pipeline go for?
I have to
about $800.
I just basically take care of that equipment, just the pipeline. You want to
get it? It could be considered a tight equipment, but it would have to.
The office doesn't have box equipment, that's a pretty tight equipment. But
yeah, it's. Well, it works out to about $2,500 per regional office, perhaps three, between $2,500 and $2,700, I suppose, not counting headquarters office. And then that you have to figure two desks, chairs, probably a table, a few odds and ends, and the typewriters and bookcases, or it would only be one typewriter.
Mr. Chairman, this figure of $1,000 a year for premium miscellaneous contractual expenses, is this also again for each?
Yes, it would be for each regional office, and then it would be another $3,000 a year for the headquarters office. And that's just a guess.
Any other questions? We may have to adjust that part of it. Could you give us a breakdown, a more detailed breakdown of what you've actually seen, the way of equipment and fully equipping the regional offices? Okay. I'd like to have that as soon as possible, because we certainly like to have these bills begin to.
Yeah, I can get more specific.
Very good. Are there any other questions, Mr. Morris? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Morrison. Is there any comments from the administration on the bill itself and its content and the purpose?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Hinman, Deputy Director, Division of Game. At this time, did you wish both comments on both 673 and 772?
If you would like to proceed in that manner, let's.
Right. On 673, the department does not really wish to come out with a firm stand one way or the other on the bill at this time. We'd like to wait until the teleconference that you have scheduled for the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 17th, and observe the outcome of that prior to taking any firm stand on this particular bill.
I don't think we're going to be discussing this bill at that time.
You will be discussing the subject of subsistence, which bears upon this, however.
We'll be discussing the bill that would regionalize the Department of Fish and Game.
I understood it was on subsistence.
Well, and then also the, whatever comments the public may have on subsistence, I'll be.
I was just wondering if you're reserving your comments because you're getting the testimony online, but the past the
You give me a great deal of credit, Mr. Mack. No, I don't believe that. That's the case.
I don't think they have that kind of grassroots relationship into the department. If they did, we wouldn't be here.
I've heard of such hearings being had.
At any rate, Mr. Chairman, the department position has not been formulated on that particular bill, so I cannot give it to you.
Very good. Thank you.
On HB 772, Mr. Chairman, I have several comments. You have, I guess, a fiscal note which indicates there is no fiscal impact on this bill, as you have that. Comments on the bill itself. Section H dictates a subsistence hunt on musk oxen, apparently anywhere in the state. First, this section is an apparent conflict with 1605-345, which sets a resident as well as a non-resident tag fee for hunting muskox, which in itself may make the term subsistence inapplicable in this case. Second, the department would oppose the relegation of all muskox hunting in the state to subsistence for several reasons, partly because they are not a traditional subsistence species, and partly because sport hunting has the potential of generating far more income to the villages directly involved than just local hunting for meat alone. The department does favor legislative action to drastically curtail or lower or eliminate the resident tag fee on non-trophy or cow musk oxen to allow local villages to participate in such hunts. Legalization of barter is in 828 of all game meat that is subsistence taken might result in all citizens of the state being allowed to do so, since the definition of subsistence taking includes all citizens, which might result in a somewhat difficult situation to control if we're not further clarifying. The department would oppose the legislation referring to 1605-257, which is that reference to musk oxen, but is not opposed to 1605-828.
Are there any questions? Mr. Inman, I'm not quite sure how to interpret your comment on the use of subsistence taken fish and game. You stated that it might allow all citizens to do so. To do what?
To barter, really. That would include all citizens, presumably, since the definition of subsistence taking presently in 1605-257 paren H, I believe, does include all citizens of the state who take it for their own use, correct? And so I was anticipating that allowing the barter is perhaps a more of an uncertainty in our minds as to just what impact it would have, but certainly legally this would seem to allow persons in Fairbanks, for example, to also barter meat and fishes and so on. And what kind of a bag of worms this might open up, I'm not really sure.
It's true, isn't it, that we have on the books the prohibition of trade and barter on existing statutes?
in the case of game, yes, except for caribou taken north of the Yukon, I believe that's still in effect, that you can still barter caribou. But as far as other game is concerned, I'm sorry, the chairman, I'd have to have the statutes and to cite them specifically, but it's the regulation rather. But it seems to me that the meat of small game, such as hare and so on, may be bartered. But the meat of big game, except for caribou north of Yukon, may not be at this time.
What about fish?
I am not certain on that. I couldn't say one way or the other. Of course, my ideal one with game and so on, all of the fish.
Well, when we last met, we had an officer of the public safety state to us that he was very much aware of the fact that although regulations and statutes were on the books that prohibited trade and barter, that it does indeed occur to a great extent, and that he indicated a great pride in himself that their department had never prosecuted any person engaged in this activity. And I was just wondering if we're just closing our eyes to something that really exists in it by just merely, you know, stating in the law that this kind of activity is permitted, since it does occur anyway, is really a step in the right direction.
I don't wish to be misunderstood. We're not, certainly not opposed to the idea of trying to make clear that the state does approve of that which goes on in the way of traditional barter. And anybody who's been in the bush knows certainly that such barter does occur and will continue to occur, and we're certainly not opposed to that. And anything that will straighten out that situation and not make inadvertent violators other people, we're highly in favor of.
Music to my ears. I said music to my ears.
Are there any questions, further questions of Mr. Henry?
Right in there.
That definitely would have to
serve that. That's got to be a federal law. Position of the department.
Okay, now, could we get into the first part of the bill here on your opposition to the muskox, Section H? I'd like to get a clearer understanding of what your opposition is. I understand that your reference to 1605-345, there is an obvious conflict here. Could you also go into a little bit more depth the reduction proposal that you stated you would be in favor of reducing the pay fee?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for several years we have felt that the high tag fee that we have on muskoxen, $1,000 for non-residents, $500 for residents, does not allow us, obviously, to make them available to many of the residents of the state, especially rural residents, because there's no option for waiving that tag fee. And we have felt, particularly because in the case of Nunavak and perhaps in the relatively near future on Nelson Island, that it's going to be necessary to remove not only bulls, which are the ones that are desired by most sport hunters, but also cows. And we've tried it a couple of years on Nunavak as far as sport hunting cows, and we find frankly, most sport hunters aren't willing to pay that $500 tag fee or $1,000 for to shoot a cow. We have felt that the logical use for these non-trophy animals would be for local residents. But in order to accomplish that, it would be necessary for that tag fee to be lowered or eliminated, one of the two. And so we have been in favor of, and still are in favor of, the reduction of that tag fee on musk oxen for the non-trophy segment, the cows, to allow local people to be able to participate. so far hasn't occurred. We'll take, obviously, action by the legislature to do. I don't know whether it would be... I don't think I have a firm feeling as to whether it would be preferable to do away with the tag fee entirely, or to lower it to a very low level, $5 to $10 or something of that order. That's strictly up to the legislature, of course. But I do feel that there should be the option, at any rate, of making non-trophy animals available for local residents at a much cheaper price than presently exists.
Well, there was a tremendous tremendous opposition expressed to the spore cape of muskox up in that area.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, on Nelson Island you're referring to. Uh-huh. We did hold, because we just went through the regulatory cycle, the board came, just finished meeting, you're aware, I suppose. We did propose a hunt on Nelson Island for 10 animals, I believe, 5. At any rate, we did propose such a hunt. And then went around and held hearings in several of the villages, Tununuk, Tuxet Bay, elsewhere, with the villagers to get their reaction to this. In the case of, I could have them reversed, but I believe it's in the case of Tuxet Bay, the people were highly opposed to a muskox hunt, by, of course, sport hunting. In the case of Tununuk, the village did vote in favor of sport hunting, having gotten a little information, I guess, from the people of Nunavak, who I should mention are strongly in favor of sport hunting because they have found that they can greatly benefit thereby. At any rate, there was obviously a difference of opinion between the villagers of Nelson Island. And because of this difference of opinion and not wanting to shove any kind of a hunt down anybody's throat, at the board meeting this last week, the department staff recommended to the Board of Game that the staff proposal for a hunt in Nelson Island be withdrawn and or defeated, and it was.
Chairman.
Mr.
I seem to recall having received a resolution from the Nelson Island vicinity group where the resolution requested there be no sport fishing done, but that subsistence hunting be permitted. If there was such a difference of opinions and feelings between the residents of the two communities, which are only maybe 1.5-2 miles apart, I'm pretty surprised, because those two communities are in regular communication with each other.
And we can check that out. I believe you're right. I do recall a resolution that may be somewhat different from
what
you
expressed. I've also seen such a resolution.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll have to check that out and see what it's... I'm not quite sure now what you state that you are, or the department is opposed to Section 1, Subsection H of House Bill 772. That is correct.
That's yes, correct.
Yes, sir. And it's because of conflict to 1605-345.
That's part of H, yes.
Okay. Very good. Do you have any suggestions that, as far as language is concerned, on how we could deal with the issue that will be found favorable to the administration? Because, you know, there is a problem of getting meat up in that area, and of course when people see someone coming in from the outside shooting something merely for sport purposes when they're hungry, it's a little bit hard to take.
I recognize that, yes sir. Personally, I think one of the best approaches might be modifying a different section, namely 345, that has to do with tag fees, that would waive either drastically reduce or eliminate the tag fees for non-trophy musk oxen? Or, I'm not sure whether it's possible, give the Board of Game the authority to waive, as they see fit, tag fees on any particular hunt. I'm not sure if that is an acceptable way to go or not, but it would be a possibility.
Imagine if it is handled that way, it would be a constitutional problem.
It may well, I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer, so I just brought it as a possibility. I don't know. Obviously, we have to have legal advice on that question.
What is the economic return to the state on the sale of a musk ox for sport purposes?
To the department?
No,
when
to
you say
just
the
entire state.
State,
right, in the way of fees and...
The average non-resident coming to Nunavak to hunt musk ox probably spends in the vicinity of $5,000.
Is that all in the state of Alaska?
There would, just to take it off, there would be a fair amount, of course, for transportation. You're aware that's fairly expensive out there. So we would get some out of this, obviously. The people on Nunavak are themselves are charging approximately $2,000 to house the individual and to provide him assistance, guide service, if you will, to take him out, get the animal, and bring it back. Incidentally, about half of that meat has been staying in the village. The hunters have been taking back about 50% of it, and 50% of it left the village. In addition, the average hunter there will spend $200 to $300 on carved items, other native handicraft that's for sale. It's been a fairly major addition to their economy. The transportation cost of his meat back out and his trophy, of course. The very often the hunters are also taken on other activities around the island, whether if it's in the fall for game bird hunting or fishing, this type of thing, which may run up the bill a little bit more. And then the other big item for the average sport hunter is the taxidermy fees, which may run several thousand dollars, but may or may not be spent within the state.
You mentioned earlier, too, because the department failed to see the traditional use of musk oxen out there. When has it become traditional to to shoot musk ox on Nunavak Island for sport?
Well, as you probably know, we only succeeded in establishing a hunt out there about, I just recall the year for sure, but it seems to me it was about 3 years ago. It took us nearly 8 years to go through all the shenanigans that was necessary to get us squared away with the federal government, because this is on a federal refuge. Had a little bit of difficulty at one time with one of our governors, too.
I think that's the only questions. Are there any questions from members?
Mr. Chairman, following your previous statement that that maybe the fee could be reduced or even perhaps eliminated particularly the area residents are concerned. Following your suggestion, what if we change this 257 to 345 and left in the line of chair, which would provide for adding a mix of sexes, which would allow for oxen to be hunted by permit? Mr. Chairman, the reason why I'm asking is because from my point of view, this would fall in line with the with what it seems to be thinking.
If it accomplished what I laid out, Mr. Chairman, I'd be all in favor of it. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure what the legal impacts of a suggested change like this would be. Again, I'll point out that if it were the same wording as here, it would open it up for all residents of the state, and you would have presumably a drawing for anyone in the state who wished to apply. That would be my interpretation at this point.
Well, who is allowed to apply now?
Anyone is, yes. What I'm saying is that if you're talking about essentially a free permit, if you will. And I presume you might get a lot more than just the local people applying. I'm just guessing.
Well, okay, now what is the fee for the cake of the muskox at this time?
At this time, you mean to apply?
No, just to kill it. I mean, if you finally granted the permit to go out and take a muskox, what do you pay the state to do that?
You don't pay the state anything except, of course, the big game tag, which is $500 or $1,000, depending on your resident or non-resident. It does cost you $10 to apply for a permit on your existing statute. Other than that, of course, it doesn't. The state doesn't charge anything further beyond that. The other charges are that I mentioned earlier were those which are charged by the residents of Nunavak for support services.
So the $500 fee, though, does put the ability of even local residents quite a bit out of range, though.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Okay.
What where is this fund? Is it an earmarked fund? Does it go back into
not except of course it all goes into the fish and game fund, which is to the earmark, but it is not earmarked beyond that. I might say that the muskox hunting, since we have begun it on Nunavak, has been one of the relatively few hunts that has been that's paid its own way. The state has gathered as much or more income than they have spent on that particular species, unless you throw in all the transplants, which, as you know, are pretty expensive. The idea originally, of course, of the high tag fee, partially at any rate, what we were told was that it would finance or go to offset costs of transplants, and we have done some of those transplants since that time.
Are there any other questions from Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, not entirely relevant to the topic before us. Sometimes asked there was a trade-off between the federal government and ours. Have you received any reports on how the transplants to the federal government are doing?
I recall a one report, Mr. Chairman, about this last fall sometime, I believe it was, a report that the musk oxen on Wrangell Island were doing quite well. They had lost one or two, but a very low mortality considering transplanting animals, and that's the only report I recall having heard. The federal government made more.
Yeah, this one. One of your comments there. You said this money goes to the Fish and Game Department for the tags. Doesn't that go to the general fund?
Fish and Game Fund.
Goes back in the general fund?
No, sir, the Fish and Game Fund.
I thought it all went back to the general fund.
Licenses and tag fees for hunting go into the Fish and Game Fund.
Yeah, this is the money that is then in turn matched with federal funds.
That's correct. Yes.
I'm not sure the Dingle Pittman.
In our case, Pittman Robertson.
Mr. Cotton.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I started to be late, and this question may have already been asked. You mentioned something about giving the sport hunters that come by the muskox, they give half of it away. There's no law against giving support taken easily?
No.
And what kind of subsistence got taken? Is there a restriction against that?
There's no legal differentiation between subsistence taken and support taken, so.
Okay, the only thing you can't do is you can't sell it.
That's correct.
You can give it away if you want.
That's correct. The problem arises in reference to the rest of this bill when it is exchanged for another item of like value, that would be barter in this case. And that's where the is written that up.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any restrictions on if you get a moose, portion of that the way you want, but it's when you exchange 50 pounds of meat for 50 pounds of fish where the state has some problems with that.
It's kind of interesting on Nunavak, Mr. Chairman. I worked very closely with those people out there setting up that hunt. And when we first started, their concern was that the hunters that came out there were going to leave that muskox meat there, and they didn't want it. They didn't know what they wanted to do with that meat. They'd never eaten muskox meat. And they had the idea that it wasn't very good to eat, and after the first several were left there and they got a taste of it, they decided that was pretty good stuff. And the last time that I talked to them, their chief complaint was that the hunters were taking too much of it back with them, not leaving them. So they found out that muskox is pretty good stuff to eat. We are really well pleased with the way the whole system on Nunavak has worked out to the benefit of the local residents as well as outside sport hunters. So I think an excellent example of how that can work.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Chairman? No, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your comments. We don't have a quorum. We've got 8 members now. We need 5 to take any action. But we do have. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify in these matters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Regina Delpios, and I represent the Alaska Conservation Society. I would like to, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, submit a position paper to your subsistence committee. I've kind of watched for an opportunity to do this, and the hearings that you hold are never just solely on the substance of subsistence. You're usually involved in the bill, so if you have no objection, I'd like to submit this to the committee at this time and just go over it briefly to allow the committee some background on how we're approaching the subsistence question in a little broader context than just considering one bill or another. And pass out copies of a fairly brief position. We've been dealing with this issue ever since probably 1971, when the Native Land Claims Act was first passed. It's gone through many, many drafts, many, many hours of work and piles of research. We've managed to get it down to essentially the 2 pages you see here. It does summarize quite a bit of work by a number of conservationists in our particular group, plus input, I think, from other groups. And I think it might be of some interest to your committee, and we're working on it in any case. We did have quite a bit of problem dealing with this issue. As the committee is well aware, if subsistence could have been defined easily, it would have been done. We wrestled with many, many definitions and, of course, concluded, as everybody else has, that it can't be defined in any way that we can really pin it down. We did conclude, however, a few things, and I would like to highlight some of these from this paper. We do believe that a wide spectrum of lifestyles is developed from many different cultural groups in Alaska. And this applies to both native and non-native. We feel that this diversity of lifestyles is a great asset to Alaska and to American society at large. We finally ended up viewing subsistence on a spectrum of lifestyles. And these would range from a resource dependency continuum, if you will, where you have people very dependent on subsistence, very close to the land on one end, as compared to people more or less in the urban areas on the other end, who abrogate their need to get resources for food and shelter to other people. An energy consumption continuum, where on one end you have a very labor-intensive acquisition of resources, and on the other end, where you have a very highly mechanized transport system, and a psychological continuum, ranging on one end to a feeling very much of self-sufficiency, to the other end, where you're letting other people essentially supply your basic needs of food and clothing and shelter. As I said, we found these a very, very complex mixture of traditionally native and non-native, and many completely new elements. They vary place to place, from time of year to time of life, and just many, many very things were thrown into this. Therefore, we just could not define either an Alaskan lifestyle or a subsistence lifestyle. We did conclude that five things, essentially, that led us to support subsistence use of natural resources for the following reasons. I'll just read these briefly. There are people with strong cultural affinities for subsistence living among both native and non-native. The basis for these affinities differ in many ways. The existence of viable subsistence lifestyles provides our society at large with added and positive elements of diversity which enrich both subsistence users and others. Subsistence lifestyles properly pursued are environmentally less disruptive or destructive than lifestyles associated with the modern agrarian industrial societies. Subsistence activities can be an ecologically sound means of supporting people in rural Alaska. Subsistence use remains an economic necessity for many rural Alaskans, and subsistence use has always been a natural part of true wilderness, contrary to today's popular notion of wilderness as a place where animals live with people only visit. We go on to discuss some of the various aspects of hunting and concluded that for hunting and subsistence to survive as positive elements, some hard realities must be recognized and reckoned with. And we have three conclusions. First, biological productivity. The basic long-term productivity of much Alaskan land is relatively low, and the abundance of plants and animals varies dramatically over any period of years. Hunting and other wild land uses must be regulated flexibly and in accord with these basic principles, or neither the wild land uses nor the wild land resources will survive in a healthy condition. Second, the human population density. For subsistence lifestyles with a high direct dependence on hunting and gathering to be perpetuated, low densities of uses in relation to resources must be maintained. As human populations rise in Alaska, the proportion of people engaging in subsistence must fall. In the past, availability of resources limited human numbers, but today, many of these historical constraints on human population have been removed. Therefore, regulations are necessary to ensure that increased human use does not damage wildland resources. Regulations are natural only for those living primitively in this way. And last, modern technology. Technology has increased the efficiency of all hunters. Improperly employed, this technology has and will continue to have detrimental effects on wildlife and its habitat. Regulation of methods and means will continue to be a necessity. And we conclude under the management section, we have been in favor of state management of the fish and game. This has historically and legally been in charge of the state. But we also realize that there have been some problems with this, and that some federal involvement is imminent. And this, of course, is tied in with the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, Section 1782, what everybody is very well aware of, the management of the state's fish and game on its federal lands. So I just wanted to present this to your committee, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry if this isn't the right time to do it, but I really didn't know what the right time was. It's a very concise position. I hope it will be helpful in representing some of the viewpoints of some Alaskans that have done a lot of thinking about this have tried to weigh all sides, and I think it's a pretty balanced point of view. Now, to make some comments specifically on the bills under consideration.
Before you do that, I need to say something.
Yes,
I read your this presentation. I almost got a week ago, a copy of this in the mail. I did pull it out, as a matter of fact, that for you see the future, because it is obvious that this group has given the subject an awful lot of thought, and doesn't contribute to my way of thinking a very balanced regard of the subject. Really, quite impressed by it. This particular, that I don't know when was that dated? That was just recent, very
yes,
recent.
Yes, sir. It was published in our, we have a quarterly publication, the last publication review, and unfortunately through numbers now, through the status of the fall issue, and it was a special issue on the B2, presenting some of our positions on B2.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman. While I ask the contents of this paper here, I take exception to one paragraph under the content. I might as well read it with a short paragraph. With both and all of fishing is of great importance. The factors affecting fish populations and aquatic habitat are in broad sense quite similar to those affecting birds and mammals. Discussions of fishing do not currently engender the temperature debate that hunting and paddling currently attention within Alaska and naturally is focused primarily on the issue of hunting. While it may be true naturally that the focus may be on hunting, but within Alaska we are focusing our attention on fishing and hunting where subsistence is concerned. Take me for an example. I have to come down here to work to supplement what I get from off the land and waters. The number of fish pounds that I get far exceeds the number of bird pounds and mammal pounds that I get back home. And I'll tell you, I think that the same applies to all of the people out in the rural areas.
That's a really good point. This paper is written, as I mentioned, mostly in context of the B2 issue. And we're looking at the Ashland. Certainly, things are viewed a lot differently in Alaska, as we all know.
Yeah,
in regards to subsistence, than they are in the Congress.
I did note that as well. And, you know, there's a great deal of difference between what the commercial take of fish in the state of Alaska is as it relates to the subsistence take of fish. And the range there is tremendous.
I don't think we disagree with you at all. It's just what we were focusing on.
I'd like to have your comments on the bills if you have.
The great group we found, there, as I'm sure the committee as well, there a great number of bills have been submitted dealing with subsistence. And we're finding it difficult to go through all of them and come up with some kind of consensus opinion. As far as House Bill 772 relating to subsistence take of fishing bill, we don't have a particular position on it, except that we do support the concept of barter subsistence type of fishing game. So in that manner, we certainly don't oppose the bill, we'll probably support it. The section on the muskoxen we found very confusing, and you have had a substantive discussion with Mr. Henry concerning that, and it would be best to let you guys deal with that particular area. On the other bill, granting a division of subsistence hunting and fishing. This again, we've had a number of comments on it from our members. We're finding it, as I said, difficult. We're looking at proposals to create permanent interim committees, committees on subsistence, subcommittees on resources, divisions of fishing, indeed. And it's getting a little, it's very difficult to try and decide which we think would be the best way to approach this problem. Some of our initial reactions have been that it's possible that creating this new division might increase the bureaucracy involved, and that we certainly don't need more of that. We do have three divisions concerned with fish, the bread division, the commercial fish, and the sport fish. And that possibly it's a better idea to go through the existing divisions and create sections in them for subsistence, Jacob, fish and game, fish and wildlife. We do certainly agree with the committee's thrust that there isn't enough attention being paid to subsistence hunting and fishing within the State Department of Fishing, and it is a very, very real problem. At this time, as I said, it's just very difficult for us to make a very clear recommendation. We certainly support the concept of more attention to this very real problem within the Department of Fishing, and I think they very much realize that they haven't paid adequate attention to it, and something that's going to have to be done very, very substantively, not just window dressing or anything. They're going to have to do it very, very substantively with this issue. It's not going to go away. It's being dealt with nationally. It's got to be dealt with in the state level. Very fair. So I'm sorry we don't have any real substantive comments on these bills, but we are trying to take a look at them in as comprehensive a fashion as possible. And when we come up with some specific recommendations, I hope we can submit them to you. We'll possibly may have to catch these bills as they go on for some of them. But I wanted to let this committee know that we are very concerned about this. The conservation community is very concerned about subsistence. We have been doing a lot of work on it, and we do believe it's a very big problem. We want to see something done. Thank you.
Well, I just got a comment I'd like to make before you leave. The Committee on Subsistence has been working on this, as you know, for quite some time now. Some of the comments that we got from people throughout the state was that, as you stated, that there is very little attention paid to the subject of subsistence, not only in the legislature, but in the administration. And I know there are some moves now by the administration that would increase the presence of people who would advocate for the issue of subsistence in the administration. However, the way I see it, it isn't enough. It's as I think you said yourself again, window dressing, and I don't think we want that. I think the state of Alaska's got to have two levels of government that are actively involved in pursuing how subsistence is going to be dealt with in the state of Alaska. I think the legislature's got to deal with it effectively, and hopefully the Permanent Committee on Subsistence will be made into law before this legislature adjourns, and again, I hope this bill is enacted into law as well, because you have to have an administrative arm dealing with the subject. It is going to increase bureaucracy. It is definitely going to cost additional amounts of money. As the fiscal note indicates, it's going to cost us, if we adopt this form of paying attention to the subject, it's going to cost us $867,000. But you also have to remember that there are approximately 80,000 people, 70,000 to 80,000 people out in Alaska, rural Alaska, that rely heavily on the subsistence use of our resources. And unless we have some coordination between sport and commercial activities, and then and have an advocate in the Department of Fish and Game advocating for recognition of subsistence use, I can see an awful lot of unhappy people out there and say, hey, look, you know, we're all for commercial taking the fishing game, and we're all for sport fishing, and you know, we think that's great, but people have to eat too. And there are a lot of people that are relying on the food that they take in the waters in the land of Alaska to live to a great degree, and any money they make supplements that subsistence income that they get. So, you know, I'm really hoping that you will take a closer look at this, and really the need that I see personally is that if the administration isn't dealing with the issue on a daily basis in a division, then we are going to want to pay lip service to it, and it's only going to be window dressing.
Certainly agree with those remarks. Our concern is that whatever is established will really work, and that you won't be stuck with another section that's going to be paper pushing, and you'll have another level to deal with. We're on record in this paper and at congressional hearings very much as subsistence should be the priority use of wildlife when there are conflicting values and risks for sport and commercial. No doubt about it, we're very, very strong on that. And and we just want to see whatever is adopted in the state of Alaska. We want to make sure it's fair and that it works, and that people's expectations are not raised to only find that, in fact, this is not really going to work. It's just another level of government. We want to be responsive internally, and that's our concern.
We won't know if it's going to work unless we do it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? We're running out of time, and Pete Frohmuth is coordinating a statewide teleconference hearing on regionalizing the Department of Fish and Game. I'd like him to go ahead and give us a pretty short briefing, if you could.
Sure.
Bring us up to par. We would expect on the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 17th, any schedules and so forth.
First of all, I think most of you probably already teleconference once or twice before anyway. I don't think you have, no, but maybe the only one. The slate of hearings on subsistence beginning on the 13th and ending on the 17th will include first a two-way audio, and then the subsequent ones will be audio, two-way video, and subsequent ones will be audio only. Your two-way video conference will be with Fairbanks and Nome, and we've got advanced indication that there'll be quite a strong turnout in both places. It's the first time, by the way, that Nome has ever uplinked a video, and that is to say, Nome, it's the first time Nome has ever sent a video image to the satellite. And so it's kind of a historic occasion for the subject. One in Fairbanks. This is the second time we've had a Fairbanks involved in video this year. On the 13th, following the video conference, there will be an audio conference with all locations. That is to say, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Nome, and Bethel. Also, indications are that turnout for at least the first two or three audio conferences will be pretty strong. On the 14th, it is audio again, and Dave and Liz's instruction on that was that the emphasis should be on the northern and interior communities and cities at this point. On the 15th, Saturday, there's another one scheduled. So all of these are beginning at 12:30. I believe your scheduling is from Dave and Liz. And the last one is on the 17th, it's also at 12:30. And the emphasis there will be the Southeastern Festival, Ketchikan and Juneau, although I expect to pick up any residue from the sites then also. We are going to be broadcast on APR Network the 13th, probably also the 14th, although Dennis Harris, the coordinator of that network, doesn't confirm that as yet. There are many other radio stations who are members of the network who are interested in taking part or all of our program will be on the 15th and on the 17th, depending upon what the location is. There's people in the interior are more interested in the 15th than they are the 17th. Petersburg and Wrangell definitely will take the 17th. So I think we're going to get very good statewide coverage for this. We're also going to get some live TV broadcast of it in the Anchorage area. This is almost certain it's going to be contingent upon more or less, I guess, is my satisfaction that in order to do that, we won't in any way jeopardize the smooth working of the two-way interactive capability between your committee and Fairbanks. It's almost in the bag as far as that's concerned. Also, there are stations in Fairbanks and the possibly known that will take Newspeak on. It's, in a word, it's probably the major conference event of this year. It's going to be very widely known. Are there any questions about that?
Have any questions? If not, thanks, Pete.
Sure.
Looking forward to it.
12:30 until 3:30, is that usually where it runs?
The video conference starts at 12:30. It's going to go until 3 o'clock. We'll break probably 15, 30 minutes to reestablish our own audio circuit and for you to get away from the hot lights. And then we go until 5 o'clock on Thursday. On Friday, it'll be 12:30 until 4:45. Saturday is 12:30 with, I think, of the conclusion conference, same thing with Monday.
This will all be in the...
It's the courtroom on Friday, Saturday, and Monday, and the governor's conference room on Thursday.
Very good. Thanks, Pete.
You bet.
Okay, we, again, can't take any action on any of the bills that we have before us, and I don't know what the committee wishes to do, but I'd sure like to, you know, start, at least get those two moving it into your committee out as soon as possible, hopefully get them up to the finance committee, wherever else you have to go before too long. But Dave was in Washington last week, and I'd like to give him an opportunity to explain some of the things that he observed back there in relation to the D2. I understand that we do have a pretty serious problem, and some of the things that Commissioner Fish and Game has been telling people back on the East Coast regarding the consensus position on D2 legislation in Alaska. The Title VII portion of H.R. 39 is being rapidly eroded by the administration at this time, has presented a 35-page report that just utterly guts the Title VII portion of H.R. 39, which is a direct reversal from what the administration's position was less than a month ago. Dave, would you give us a brief?
Mr. Chairman, I was in Washington at the Merchant Marine and Fisheries hearings on the 4th, 6th, and 7th last week, and the Senate hearings on the 5th. At your request, in order to get some more information that could help the bills that we've introduced in this committee. There were three people that talked most specifically to Title VII, then being Don Mitchell of Rural CAP, Byron Malott of Alaska Federation of Natives, and Commissioner Scoob. Mr. Mitchell explained a little bit of the background of Title VII, and it was interesting. I think the people here might be interested. He stated that Title VII was a result of a coalition between Congressman Young, Congressman Seidman, Rural CAP, Department of Interior, and also that the governor had been quite involved over the last 6 months with drafting the present language of Title VII. He stated that Title VII was a very delicate thing, that nobody was overwhelmingly happy with, that they seemed to satisfy, or up until a week ago, seemed to satisfy the needs of most parties, with the exception of Senator Stevenson, is definitely against it. He stated that the governor, although he has always endorsed Senator Stevens' bill 1787, he had stated in his testimony before the Cyberlink Committee in Fairbanks that he could live with Title VII, although he wanted a grievance procedure whereby people that felt that subsistence wasn't being protected could go through state channels before they appealed back to the secretary. And I might add, in the current print three, that grievance procedure would have been included. He also referred to an interview with Thunder Times in which the governor stated a similar opinion about Title VII, that he could live with it quite well if there was a grievance procedure set up. Mr. Malott also talked about this coalition, how it was quite a delicate thing, and how he felt there was a need to preserve it if there was going to be any sort of constructive action taken on subsistence. Commissioner Scoob's testimony was probably the most interesting, caused the most reaction during last week. I can quote a few things from his written statement, and a few things from my notes that I think kind of summarize what he said. He had three basic points. The first point being that he firmly believed, and the administration firmly believed, in the common ownership of all animals by all people. And I'd like to quote something. On page 16 of his testimony, he said, "Most of these D2 proposals are designed to get special and sometimes exclusive attention to subsistence users. I would submit that despite all the emotionalism involved, it is not practical, desirable, or even possible to separate realistically subsistence from all other uses. The state's position on this issue consistently has been that we prefer no special provisions should be made in federal D2 legislation." I guess that very well summarizes his position on that point. His second point was that subsistence was really not all that significant an issue. with relationship to this D2, and she stated that 85% of the nutritional, or of the subsistence food by people in rural Alaska were met by the taking of marine mammals and fish. He said of the 15% of the needs of people in the bush, the remaining 15%, only 10% of that was taken on federal lands. And he implied then, as a result of those statistics, he stated that subsistence was really not that major an issue, at least with relation to D2. His third major point was that he did not want any mechanism in federal legislation to deal specifically with subsistence, that he didn't really want it to be addressed at all, other than perhaps the way it was addressed in Senator Stevens' bill, which devotes three sentences to subsistence. He was definitely opposed to a whole title devoted to subsistence, dealing specifically with it. Specifically, a couple more things from his statement with relationship to this reluctance to deal with subsistence. It says the state prefers that subsistence be handled as merely another consumptive use of fish and wildlife resources, and that it not become institutionalized by congressional law. Also, he stated that the subsistence question can be handled adequately within the existing framework of state regulations concerning consumptive uses of fish and wildlife. Specifically on this question, Chairman Leggett of the Merchant Marine and Fisheries Committee asked the commissioner at one point, he said, and I quote, is there a need for more rural input in Alaska in the fish and game regulatory process? And the commissioner answered, and I quote here from my notes, no, there's not. We have adequate participation now through the 55 advisory boards and we have our own state. Also, I might add that I was informed that during the week, in addition to testifying, that the commissioner spent a good deal of time talking with people in the Department of Interior about this position, which seems to be a new position as far as administration goes, and there was informed by people. Well, also, I think it's important to note that people in Washington, D.C., accepted the commissioner's statements as being a consensus opinion of all the people in Alaska. And when I talked to some people saying that there were some people, specifically in the Bush caucus, who didn't agree completely with the commissioner, they were stunned to learn that was so. They had just assumed that what the commissioner said was total consensus. Things right now in Merchant Marine and Fisheries, starting this week, they're going to be drafting a committee substitute. In fact, beginning today. And if anyone in Juneau is interested in having some input into that, it would have to be done probably before Wednesday. If anybody is interested in responding.
Mr. Chairman, maybe what we ought to do is have the resolution drafted up and signatured and send it down to the Marine Fisheries Committee. of course, we're going to have to speak to the contrary of what Commissioner Scoop's apparent testimony.
Well, we should make copies of that testimony, get up to the subsistence committee members as soon as possible. And I'm really disappointed that we took that kind of a position out there, at least not even, as far as I know, discussing that with any member. Did he discuss this with you, Val, before he left?
No. What day was he? Did he testify?
His test on Tuesday, and then he finished it off on Thursday.
No. The only thing we talked about is what I talked to the commissioner about was getting a couple of people on the board, you know, with subsistence, so they could have some input in from the rural area, and he seemed to agree on it. And that's about 3 weeks ago.
So are we having a Bush caucus meeting today? Is that scheduled?
Yeah, I think so. I'm in the middle
of that. Yeah. Maybe we ought to bring this up as a special order of business then and draft something. But on just going specifically to Bill, so I would like you, Dave, and our legislative staff to get together with Mr. Hinman on the Section H in 772 and iron out any problems that we possibly can on that bill regarding the tapered muskox, because there are people that are upset about that and would like to have that issue dealt with. That's 05257 and the apparent conflict that exists with 1605345. And it's something like that for us. As far as the next meeting, though, the next meeting I'd like to hopefully we can get a quorum and get these bills out of here, and possibly during the teleconference time, we will have the bills ready for final review of the subsistence committee so that they can be signed out of committee and moved to resources. If you'll study your packets, you'll notice that Evan Hobson has some recommendations regarding changes that he'd like to see in existing legislation and modifications he'd like to see, as well as Norm Cohen, who made who gave us testimony at our last subsistence committee meeting. And we should take those recommended changes into consideration as you take a look at the bills that they're suggesting to change, and incorporate those that you think can be without too much difficulty, and then have these have a committee substitute drafted and submitted to the members of the committee before the 13th meeting. And of course the teleconference will deal primarily with the subject of regionalizing the Department of Fish and Game. Is there anyone else that would like to say anything at this time, this meeting? Any comments? If not, this committee is adjourned.
Let's see. We're supposed to get the
okay, now, Joe said that the composite of the entire notice would be ready to be read, you know, in a couple of hours, so get that.
Yeah.
But also start drafting up a resolution for the Bush caucus. Remember, just leave it open. Don't name any names, but then we'll just have a place to sign a lot of the resolution.
I'm not sure if you have to.
Yeah, I've got. There's quite a lengthy question and answer session. Especially on Tuesday. Megan specifically was asking.
You can just draft a conversation.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Oh,
it was good to get some more information.
Of course, we should. By the way, we'll be able to get to those. Dollar amounts real quick because they are.
Can you
send us a copy of that? Yeah, I'll distribute copies to everyone.
Anyway,
I'll take you up.
Each legislator had one put on his desk earlier in the session. You could easily have been misplaced.
Okay, well, just take all the screws out of that and submit what you do for the composite in 772 right into the committee substitute for us on the committee.
Sorry, won't you?
I My day is scheduled to climb up the hill at least twice a day, so I could easily stop by.
Okay, I'm here all day. No, downstairs.
Unfortunately, this will be
the first day. So, well,
maybe not.
I was at teleconference.
No, I'm just, I just want to try to.
Yeah, I guess it's.
Yeah.
Have Lucy make composite bill.
Have Lucy make copies of the testimony as soon as possible.
That's good.
Yeah, we'll get it into the boxes.